I'm going to go roll the intro real quick, and then we'll get right into it. All right, go. So, hey, everyone. Happy Friday, officially. Welcome to the Digital Cash Rundown, episode 150. So if this is a weekly show, I've done almost every single week. I've taken a couple off for whatever circumstances, but that's 150 weeks in a row, which is just about 3 or so years. I think I started this channel, I think yesterday might have been the 4-year anniversary starting this channel, as far as I could tell. And then I started doing a live show a few months later. So it's been going for a while. So I'm joined by the one and only Vanessa Harris. How's it going?
Hey, it's great to be here. Actually, I guess, funnily enough, the show that you were just on with me was my episode 159. So we're close.
Wow. And you don't do it weekly, though. You do a lot of them.
Sporadically. It's either every day or once every 6 months.
That makes sense. That's sounds like my rhythm. So this has been one of those things where this every Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern time for me has been one of those like really consistent. It's helped me in my sporadic life to just give me a sense of like order and balance. So yeah, that's kind of where it's been at. So everyone, make sure you hit the up button. Share it, everything like that. Make sure to throw some comments in. I'll obviously I read the comments, but if you're in my Discord and have a super chat access because you own one of my NFTs, again, I'm shitcoining all over the place over here, then yeah, you'll get the priority little super chat. I'll put that up on the screen. Let's see. So before we roll right into the new stuff, I do have to, Coin ATM Radar was nice enough to throw me a bag for talking about them, even though they admitted they didn't think they were going to make any money off of me. So I have to be nice to them and do the little read for them. So this podcast is sponsored by Coin ATM Radar. And when buying crypto with cash, an ATM is much more reliable and safer than meeting some random person in a random place and maybe getting thrown into prison, like we mentioned on the last show. You know, don't do that. And unlike an exchange, which could freeze your account or delist you, again, we also just talked about that, you truly own all the crypto you buy. With Coin ATM Radar, you can find crypto ATMs and other services where you can buy or sell cryptocurrencies for cash. On their website, search by coin, address, if the ATM supports selling as well as buying. You can also search by geo area, like country, state, and city. And you can also check and compare actual current fees at different ATMs. Find out more, go to coinatmradar.com or coinatmradar.com. So there's that thing. Now, let's talk about Coinbase. So just throwing up this first headline on the screen about breaking, Coinbase drops Bitcoin and UTXO coins. More focus on Ethereum and USDC instead. Coinbase Commerce also removed BTC from its merchant payment platform. There's some, it's not exactly 100% accurate there, but basically what Coinbase has done, Coinbase Commerce has done, is they removed the ability to pay with UTXO coins non-custodial, like outside of their platform, like natively. Like if you have a random Bitcoin wallet or a Dogecoin wallet or whatever it is, you can't use that anymore. You have to have a Coinbase account and transfer from that account to pay a merchant. Or you could connect via their EVM type solution thing. So do you have a hot take on this before I just ramble nonstop again?
Yeah, I have some thoughts. And actually, I just sent you a link to a Twitter thread from one of their product leads in Coinbase Commerce. Mm-hmm. So if folks are curious about reading that, I'll basically summarize it. It goes something to the effect of blah, blah, blah. We're doing this for our customers to support the scenarios that are most used on Coinbase and really focusing on EVM because of that. Here's all the ways that you can use Bitcoin if you have a Coinbase account. But everyone else, since it wasn't used that much, sorry, was the high level kind of overview of that. My perspective is that it's a completely reasonable decision. You know, I was in product leadership for more than 20 years in big tech. That's the exact kind of decision you would have made. You would have looked at the data and seen that most of the transactions come through these kinds of blockchains. There's very few on the left. You're going to do some prioritization as you move into the future where you spend your engineering resources and you end up with something like this. So it's not like an unreasonable path to take. The problem is that the effects, like the second order effects of denying people the ability to use their self-custody Bitcoin, it's not obvious initially. And cutting off that path has kind of long-term it's got long-term harm to the entire sense of liberty that we have. And none of that would have been taken into consideration as they were making this decision.
Yeah, for sure. Also, any large entity tends to not be the best at listening at customer feedback. And I have to just give this, you know, almost universal throwaway, almost criticism of Coinbase, in that there's some of the worst listeners in the space, as far as I cannot get a hold of them. Customer support, like, is, and I've known a lot of people actually who worked for Coinbase customer support, and even they couldn't sugarcoat it. Customer support is not there. It's not very good. No offense to all the hardworking people in there, but it doesn't really work. I tried to become a customer because there are some like fiat income source things that, of course, I don't touch fiat, so I needed an instant conversion thing. I know that they had, like, Bitwage is great because they let you receive your salary or whatever non-custodially in crypto, but they only support super high fee chains. And if I'm getting like, oh, X sends me $200 and it's like, now it's eaten up in Bitcoin fees. Like, I don't want that.
Yeah.
So I tried to set up Coinbase for a direct deposit, and I had some questions because I want to do it through my LLC, right? Not like for a personal thing, right? And I just could not get any answers from them. It was such a nightmare to set up. I just abandoned them and went with Bitwage anyway. So, it's kind of, they've lost literal customers over not listening very well. And
I mean, honestly, they probably don't care. Yes. Like, if you've worked in an organization that has 100 million customers or, you know, X million customers, they can't afford to care unless you have a certain threshold that you meet in terms of fees that you're paying them.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're not a big fish, you don't matter as much. And I understand that that's just kind of the way the world works, right? But
there's something else maybe to think about. Sorry for interrupting. Is that like Coinbase, a lot of the crypto industry looks at them and says, oh, Coinbase is on our side. They're pushing all these great policies. They're suing the SEC. They're doing whatever. Just realize that Coinbase is only on our side as long as it suits them. As soon as they don't need us anymore, Coinbase is on Coinbase's side.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly the kind of point with this whole thing is notice. It's not like a conspiracy theory, it's just like a noticing of a pattern where the only ways you can pay them now through their merchant solution are by being one of their customers or by being an L2 customer, of which they have one as well. So there is no, they don't offer any payment source where they don't have a strong possibility of being on both ends of that, not just the merchant side, but the customer side. So before, you could just, any wallet could just pay them, or not any, but like plenty. And then they cut that out, and now they're funneling more people into things, high likelihood of that they control the entire loop of the payment process. So it's clearly, there's clearly a lucrative angle to this. I've heard Coinbase representatives testifying before Congress recently, complaining about the lack of enforcement on their competitors and things like that. Yeah. And they have every right to feel like upset at that. But at the same time, it does make them not on our side. It makes them on Coinbase's side, which means they have sometimes overlapping priorities, but not always. So it's a little, there's some elements of shadiness to here. I posted.
But don't get me wrong. I'm glad that Coinbase exists in the space, right? And they have billions of dollars they can throw at lawyers, which for now will hopefully shape the laws to be less worse than they could otherwise have been.
Yeah, for sure. I did a post on this that got a bunch of engagement, and I just put that up on the screen. But one thing that I kind of highlight is I suspect it's because they're tired of juggling a million different blockchains, payment standards, wallets, confirmation time issues, etc. And this is something that I did a space on this yesterday. Was kind of talking about that. We're in such a weird shape with crypto as far as like the payment standards. It used to be the universal payment standard in crypto when it was only UTXO coins and stuff was it BIP21, I believe, which instead of just address, it goes Bitcoin :address and amount equals X. Just that's it. And that's the very basic one. When you scan a QR code, it puts in the address and then it puts in the amount and then you pay it. The very simple one. It's surprising to see in 2024, I've seen some merchants not have that where you have to like manually enter an address. And like, it blows my mind that they're not on that. But after that, the problem was then Bitcoin became less reliable for payments when you had like basically consistent mempool congestion. And then you ended up having replaced by a fee, which made double spends a much more real possibility. And then it's like, okay, well, how are you going to detect if a payment is okay enough for, you know, again, Bitcoin, the majority player, and then all these other coins? And then, of course, BIP70 came out, and that basically your wallet server connects to the merchant server, and you arrange the payment details that way, including like real-time fiat pricing, including things like making sure RBF is off. And for whatever reason, and I have a rabbit hole of conspiracy theories on that, of course, but it got removed. So support for BIP70, which is what BitPay, I don't know if they came up with it, but BitPay's wallet was the first one to come up with it. And at one point, BitPay's wallet was the only wallet in the world that could pay BitPay's invoices, which again, like, oh my gosh, we're here again. But Bitcoin Core deprecated support for this for some other random reason. Now, a bunch of coins like Bitcoin Cash, Dash, et cetera, do still have support for BIP70. And I think it's great. It's worked great every time I've used that. But just the point is, there's just so much stuff floating around for like, how do you just accept a basic payment? And then the whole big part of the space has been saying, no, Lightning, use Lightning. And Lightning is incredibly complicated for a reliable payments method, as far as like, it's always going to work.
And I'm going to say Lightning is one of the best advertisements for Monero.
Yeah. Or for anything that just works, that you hit send and it works. Because Lightning, and I have friends who work in Lightning development stuff, and I think there's a lot of interesting applications. It's just completely, I don't know if it's dishonestly or just mistakenly pushed as a peer-to-peer payments technology when it's an institution-to-institution settlement technology. And if you use it like that, it works great, where it's like, okay, I have a Kraken account, and then I want to get it, take advantage of some arbitrage thing on, you know, Binance or whatever. And it just goes zoop. They just shuffle the capital over on that side and I do my trading there. And they can have a well-balanced bi-directional channel and it works. But just like I have to make sure I have liquidity and channel connections to every single merchant and re-maintain them with on-chain transactions, and like, it's not going to work. But so then you have that, and what are they going to support that too? And at some point, it just got too complicated where they want to support one payment standard, where they can either just say, our internal accounting says this customer has less, this customer has more, and then they want to just do the basic EVM connect a wallet kind of thing. And Brian Armstrong did talk about this. Let me throw his thing up on the screen real quick, where he talks about this. He just said some context. Commerce uses a new EVM payment protocol. You can pay from any self-custody wallet. We believe, and this is the big one, we believe paying with crypto is going to primarily happen on layer 2 in the future. And we want to help make this happen. All the other stuff, whatever. That's the important part right there. I might as well highlight
My perspective is that's a ridiculous Ethereum-focused view of the world. No one's going to pay 10 to 50 cents for a transaction, every transaction, which is the price I'm paying right now on Arbitrum for certain things.
Yeah, just for regular transactions, or is that for like smart contract operations?
It depends on the load of stuff.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, the L2 scaling thing is kind of an interesting idea. Well, let me put it this way. The entirety, and I hate to say, like, it's one of those things where when we are into digital peer-to-peer cash or whatever, and the entirety of the world says crypto is a scam, it's like we're like that, facing the crowd saying, you're wrong, like that meme thing. And then now that crypto is taking off, the majority of crypto, I should say, by market capitalization, like if you say Bitcoin's market cap plus Ethereum's market cap plus all the L2 projects associated with those two, only those two chains. I'm sure you could do other L2 ideas as well, is probably like 80% or more of crypto. It's just overwhelmingly crypto's the money in crypto, which money talks more than anything, is agreeing with Brian Armstrong here. And I am saying you're wrong. You know, who the hell am I to say you're wrong? But I'm saying you're wrong. And so where he is kind of, I guess, right on is a lot of Bitcoin-based L2 ideas have gotten interesting, kind of like there's a higher social barrier to overcome to implement them than for Ethereum L2s. Ethereum L2 is easy, just plug one in, doesn't matter. Whereas there's this social purity test that has to go with Bitcoiners before they want to do an L2. I don't know if you've noticed the same.
There's a social purity test around everything with Bitcoiners. Like even the whole ordinals discussion that's happening using the Bitcoin network as it was designed and intended, some people get their panties in a bunch about it. You know, my perspective is ordinals are bad, but to like filter them from the mempool, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is kind of, I'm going to throw up the tweet by Joe Nakamoto on the screen. I don't know his real name, but whatever. He just said, that confirms it. Coinbase Commerce doesn't accept real Bitcoin, fiat 2.0, facepalm. And of course, I have my spicy response to that. And, you know, as you can hear, I talk a little bit differently on X just for like brevities and whatever. But anyway, I said 100% what the current Lightning based ecosystem is: pot, meat, kettle, on chain, self custody, or get the fuck out. So it's a little spicier than I would usually communicate in like a pleasant podcast conversation, but it's true, right? The Bitcoin ecosystem has turned into a custodial, largely custodial, or in the case of something like the Phoenix wallet, which I'm a very big fan of the Phoenix wallet, is the only bright spot in the Lightning ecosystem, if I were to say that. But even then, it's a fully managed liquidity solution where it's technically non-custodial, but they do enable all your payments themselves. And you can't just plug into a different wallet. You'd have to start from absolute scratch and force close all your channels and wait like a couple weeks for your transactions to settle and all this kind of stuff. And so that's no good. But the point is, the Lightning ecosystem is very much this exact same closed loop, fiat 2.0 type thing. It's just, the purity test just is like, well, no, it's not our thing. And I should like also point out that like now the Liquid network is being pushed, because Liquid, once you're on Liquid, I haven't used it, but it seems like things just move a lot smoother than Lightning. There aren't all these like barriers between payments. Things just don't go through. It just works, kind of. The problem is Liquid is basically a cartel, right? It's a federated system where you cannot participate without express permission of the participating companies. Like the federation is set in stone, from my understanding, and anyone can bridge Bitcoin in, but just like the Hotel California, you can't leave. You can't get your Bitcoin out of Liquid without permission from the council or whatever. So
that's insane.
That is insane, and it's worse than similar, but worse than Ripple XRP, in my opinion. And that's one project that, you know, the Bitcoin maximalists absolutely hate. Very funny how this works.
Let me test a theory that's been rolling around in my mind on you, which is that as you get closer to having transactions that are cheap and can reasonably scale, you out of necessity get closer to centralization. So we see that with L2s on Ethereum. We see that with Bitcoin and Lightning. You could even say we see that with Solana, where, yeah, it's fast and cheap, but it's arguably a lot more centralized than either of those two. So does that hold up in your brain, or am I just making things up?
I would say 85% no. 15% or so yes. Like there are trade-offs you have to make when you do intensive things. And like I did some post not too long ago about what I call the scalability quadrilemma, because they usually put out as a trilemma between decentralization, security, and scalability. But I add the extra, the kind of offshoot of scalability of features, whereas you can have something that's decentralized and secure and highly scalable, but then when you start adding smart contract capabilities in, that's like a feature. So that's like a multiplier for scale. And so it just makes it harder to balance everything. Now, I do think you can get a good result from everything. It requires a lot more engineering and does have some trade-offs sometimes, right? Go ahead. I've been ranting.
I was going to ask, just in terms of like systems that do meet your quadlemma, like what are some examples? Maybe I'm just kind of learning on the fly here on your show.
One good example, for example, is like Zcash, and we're going to hit on Zcash in the future. But Zcash is also committed to on-chain scaling and all the other kind of stuff. But because the zero knowledge technology is much more computationally intensive, and there's some extra things you have to do because you don't have a transparent blockchain to just be able to scan really easily. Because of these trade-offs, you had something like the sandblasting attack, which happened over the last few years, that had to have some things fixed. But for example, it's a lot harder to sync wallets from scratch. And so a lot of times in order to the light clients, I should say, because full node clients should be fine with all this stuff. But for now, and by the way, and the technology is getting better all the time, so it's becoming less resource intensive over time. But for example, a lot of wallets take a sync, like if you want to sync a light client from scratch, you'd have to kind of trust a server to like at their starting point and then just sync from there. You don't have to trust them after that, but from that part, if you want to save a ton of time. And so there's like that little bit of a trust trade-off you hit. And then also one of the more important innovations or improvements, I should say, rather innovations in making stuff like Zcash spendable in the real world is this spend before sync kind of thing. Whereas if you've already synced your balance fully at some point, and then 3 weeks later you want to make a payment, you don't have to sit there for 1, 2, 3 minutes syncing your phone back to the latest block before making a payment. You can pay off of the available balance that you already had. Now, if you received since then, you want to spend those coins, you would still have to sync. So there are those little things where you do, because we have the scalability plus features bit, right? Where the zero knowledge proofs are features. That's when you start to run into those kinds of issues. And then if you look at like, a lot of Justin Bond's posts and stuff. And he's a very, I would say 100% to 0% kind of person. He's very intelligent and knows a lot of nuance, but he expresses it in a very nuance free sort of a way. His perspective is that you can mass scale with some good trust without too many trust assumptions, a basic payments kind of blockchain pretty easily. The only thing is you have to explore things like execution sharding if you want to do like smart contracts or something. It's a lot more intensive. And so that's kind of, I guess, the perspective I have like right now. I know that like Litecoin can easily do 4 times what Bitcoin can do in terms of transaction volumes, just not even sneezing. Dogecoin's doing a lot more right now. Bitcoin Cash,
I guess I was thinking of like actual transactions of the volume that a Solana or a Cosmos would do. Mm-hmm. So, not hundreds or thousands, but tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands. Maybe sharding is the answer, right? Like folks like Multiverse X and Near, I think, are exploring that.
Yeah. I don't know near enough about the intricacies of all this, but I would think that sharding is probably the way forward. Like, keeping on working on sharding technology and stuff like that. And Solana, as far as I know, just doesn't shard. And they're just, they're kind of like the BSV of the EVM world of just like bigger is better. And there you go. Kind of like everything else.
That's their single global state is like one of their value props that they talk about. And I guess to some extent, it reduces the user experience issues that could come up with having some of these, L2s obviously introduce a lot of that issue. Even sharding, so they have it on Multiverse X, but it results in certain transactions being faster or slower than others, which you could see and could potentially introduce MEV and some of those issues into the system.
Yeah, there's nothing perfect. I do think that one of those situations where the problem is like a lot of times layer 2 scaling proponents largely point out valuable limitations, like real things that are like, okay, there might be some trade-offs here. They might be this. Probably blown out of proportion a little bit, but they do point those out. The problem is the solution ends up being worse than the problem. Where, for example, I meant NFTs on Polygon because I would have done on Arbitrum if I'd known that that was going to be the more cool one down the rank, but whatever. The point is, there's like a basic multisig and admin keys. I have no illusions that I'm using a trust minimized system, really. It's, I mean, they don't know who I am. Like, they're not going to censor my transactions, yeah, very likely. But the point is that it could happen much easier than on something like Ethereum. And so the only thing I am inheriting from Ethereum as a Polygon user today, and maybe there might be a lot of ignorance in this statement, and it's a lack of nuance, right? But for the most part, the one thing I'm inheriting is the ecosystem, which is kind of like using a Bitcoin fork in a way, where it's like, well, you don't have Bitcoin security, but you have, or anything, but you have, it does the basic same thing. You can trust the code base is well worked through and compatible. And so it's kind of like saying, well, we have to use centralized trusted, semi-trusted systems in order to avoid having a centralized semi-trusted system. And that's where it gets gross.
I feel like there's perhaps a little bit of nuance in Polygon versus, say, Arbitrum, because Polygon is actually not a layer two, at least not right now. It's more of a sidechain. They did a really interesting marketing trick where they said, yeah, we're an Ethereum layer two. And I think that's one of the reasons they got such broad adoption, because people just don't know, right, what's going on. So you're right, they inherit the ecosystem. Apps can easily port over because they're built in EVM, but they don't inherit any of the security. Even though Arbitrum, I think right now, is a multisig, the plans are eventually that it could inherit security through some of the kind of roll-up tech that's behind it.
Yeah. So that's the kind of thing is like eventually. Also, eventually, you can optimize on-chain scaling. And a lot of things that I guess shape my perspective, of course, come from most of the examples I've seen of lack of scale come from an explicit decision to do it. Whether it's I was using Bitcoin, I had to like stop using Bitcoin because of the block size limitation, not because the network couldn't handle it, but the people running it chose not to. And then Ethereum, it was a lot murkier, but Nikita of Blockshare, which, you know, I work with Blockshare, you know, in the Dash capacity kind of thing now, but I've always been a fan of his stuff. He's been one of the early people, years before this became a problem, calling out Ethereum's lack of raising the gas limit, as in the basic corollary to the block size, to kind of increase, you know, throughput and keep fees low. And obviously there's so much more nuance with Ethereum than with Bitcoin. Bitcoin's is relatively simple, I think. With Ethereum's much less simple, but from my perspective as someone who's not, maybe I was like a 60, 70% grasp of like Ethereum, whereas I feel like I have like a high 90s grasp of the Bitcoin ecosystem, it seems like there's still a lot of deciding to not scale on L1 rather than trying and not being able to do it the right way. And so I haven't seen, and unfortunately when you have these kinds of Overton windows, right, you have opposite sides, and so you have the unreasonable non-scalers and then you have the unreasonable scalers. Like, for example, you could say a Solana, or you could say like a Bitcoin SV, which throw mass scale out there to prove it can be done. And the point is not to prove it could be done. The point is it could be done without a lot of these massive trade-offs. And they seem to be a little light on caring about those trade-offs. So I think that there is I wouldn't say a happy medium between the two. It's much more on the side of the Solana and BSV side of things, in my opinion. But it's still reasonably decentralized, reasonably trust minimized, et cetera. There's ways of getting that done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So at some point I would like to do a series of explorations on L2 scaling. I know Justin Bonds has agreed to come on my podcast and talk about it because he's kind of the Peter Schiff of that, as it were, like the bear, the villain of that story to the modern orthodoxy. I'd like to have someone who's very knowledgeable and reasonable about L2 scaling and can advocate for it to come on and give the other side of things, because in my understanding, a lot of times you end up with your L2s using a worse trust setup than if you just massively scale the L1 anyway. So that's kind of an interesting dichotomy.
Yeah, it seems like all of these approaches to scaling have very similar trade-offs. And so I'm thinking right now of, you know, the Cosmos ecosystem. It's got the horizontal scaling through, you know, app chains, but then it has the challenge of where do you get your security from? And so now they're trying to kind of backfill that with interchain security and getting security from the Cosmos hub that you can inherit for different app chains. Well, L2s kind of have the same thing, except they've chosen, you know, a multisig initially in order to do that. Some app chains may have chosen their set of validators with very poor economic security. Yeah, I'm just noticing there's sort of a parallel between where you start out with less of that security.
Yeah, of course. It ends up in the same spot eventually. And it is kind of funny how, like, the, for example, like right now you have Adam Beck in his emails with Satoshi coming out, and in it, Satoshi was talking about, like, he's complaining about, like, third-party middleware getting in the way of all that kind of stuff. In the meantime, Back was plotting to launch his own company around just doing that in a terrible kind of way. All the posturing about, like, look, Ripple is why you can't scale on-chain, because it ends up like that, and then trying to push people into something worse than Ripple, i.e. Liquid. And it kind of ends up, like, I think that the... So, for example, Litecoin is probably the most used purely payments coin currently. I think, depending on the day, they got like 200,000 to 800,000 transactions, and is the top most used coin on BitPay, for example, for a few months in a row now. It briefly dipped below Bitcoin again, and now it's back up. And so I think that, like, between Litecoin has like 800 nodes or something, and, you know, pretty well distributed hash rate. Litecoin's showing you can do that today. And I think that it shouldn't be, well, Bitcoin 1 megabyte versus that. I think that, like, we can at least get to a Litecoin, or maybe like a Litecoin and beyond, and then start being hesitant about scaling without further investigation, you know?
I mean, if I recall, doesn't Visa have a max TPS of something like 40,000? So transactions per second?
Something like that.
It feels like if we're talking about, you know, 10,000 a day, we're not even close to absorbing the commerce of, you know, even the United States, let alone the world.
Yeah, I wonder what the TPS is of the combined top 100 market cap coins, though. You know, that would be kind of interesting to see. Because
that's interesting, because there's sort of decentralization in the coin network that you choose as well.
Yeah, and so if there's just a few, like, for example, say BitPay or other crypto supports, like, five coins at a time. Like, they're just five coins, and you have a certain amount of volume that comes from those. And then if you go to different regions of the world, some regions prefer different networks. Like, for example, Latin America loves using Tron to send Tether and stuff like that. So, okay, maybe that's more used over there.
Yeah, not USDC anymore now that their Circle's pulling out.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, it was never a lot of USDC, but now that Circle's pulling out, now it's like none. And maybe they're trying to, like, isolate their competitor as, like, a sketchy blockchain, maybe they're trying to pull that regulatory angle, who knows? But the point is, who knows where we would be? Who knows how many payments end up being batched, or that there's some sort of a pre-signing of certain payments or whatever. Like, for example, there's lots of different ways of taking scale off of, you know, the mass payments, where you could, you know, for example, do a sort of single use payment channel type thing, where instead of like a whole latent network, you just, when you go to the coffee shop, you open a two-way channel, you hang out there and work for a while. Every time you get a latte, you shove some more on the other side of the panel. And then when you just settle up, you settle up, and it's like one on-chain transaction as opposed to like four or five, not one as opposed to 1,000, right? But like one as opposed to four or five. There's lots of ways you can kind of get that to a manageable level. But, like, I think the real reason is, like, right now we are not paying with crypto other than, like, me and five other people. There's very few people who are using it. And that's a much bigger problem, in my opinion, than the network struggling to scale to meet the demand. It's just that because we haven't just used it, now all of a sudden we don't have this demand. And I think we need to get this demand.
I think that's a valid perspective, right? Until we kind of push up against the limits of the chain, maybe we don't need to worry as much about scaling. Mm-hmm. I guess the flip side is that if you can scale to extreme, Solana mm-hmm. being the example, you can unlock different types of payment scenarios. So it's not necessarily just I pay you, but you know, perhaps it's a stock exchange or something else that relies on transactions on chain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and like definitely one thing that's kind of unfortunate maybe with Ethereum and EVM type chains, which I'm not sure, but it's that there's this, I guess, conflation of payments with data transactions. And there's a lot of, it's just the way it's designed, but for example, a lot of people were using money on Ethereum, and then all of a sudden a bunch of cats came through the chain and they couldn't use their money. And like, that's a problem, right? It's like if you have an outage because there's a social media event and everyone is like posting on X about like, oh, the Super Bowl, look at what happened here, and like all this kind of stuff. And then because of that traffic, you cannot pay your rent that day. That is a big problem, okay? We need to segregate those two things. Or I don't know if we need to, but we need to at least have the capacity that we don't have to worry about those things. Otherwise, we might want to segregate. So whether it's you have a data chain and you have a payments chain on the same basic network umbrella, or whether you use two different networks, like you use like Solana for all your Web3e stuff, and then you use something like Litecoin, let's just say, or Zcash for your payment stuff, then you know Solana goes down because you know too many, you don't mind as much because you could still pay your bills.
There's a conversation that's been happening for a while now in the Cardano community where they talk about essentially splitting the transactions into certain ones which are governed by sort of fee tiers. Mm-hmm. So just like Ethereum, as it gets busy, it gets more and more expensive, and others which are, you know, a small amount, but the amount of, I guess, scalability within that channel is set and limited. Mm. And so if you have something that's less important, maybe, you know, paying your rent this month, you stick it in there, it'll get there, you know, eventually, but then all the contention happens in the other kind of fee tier channel.
Mm-hmm. That could be a thing too.
They haven't implemented it. It definitely has its own set of trade-offs, right? But
yeah, of course.
It would mitigate some of the hot NFT launch blocking everything.
Yeah, of course. And I don't think there's a problem with like an L2 solution or a sidechain for a different purpose, whether it's, for example, like if I don't need the Sound Money chain to process every time I update my X bio or whatever, I don't need that to happen. Or every time I'm flaming some maxis and that's all being recorded on a blockchain, that doesn't need to be the payments chain necessarily. I can have a different trade-off, a set of trade-offs for that, you know? And as long as it settles like once, even if it doesn't settle to the main chain, it's just a different, like my data storage thing versus my money. I can find so many ways of storing data, but like my money is almost sacred, right? That's a lot more important to my livelihood. So maybe there's just different trade-offs for different use cases, you know?
It sounds almost similar to what some of the Cosmos Hub folks are talking about as Atom, as kind of the decentralized money, where mm-hmm. on the Cosmos Hub today, there are no smart contracts. It's just a, you know, fairly high TPS way of sending Atom back and forth. Mm-hmm. And if you want to do anything crazy like NFTs, you I guess bridge it over to one of the app chains like Stargaze, which sounds very similar to the model that you're talking about of like, yeah, there's money and it happens and it doesn't have all this other stuff. But then if you want all the other stuff, you can go do your DeFi or do your NFTs or do, you know, whatever, your social networks on some other app chain and eventually come back if you want to use it as money again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. I think that makes sense from a lot of perspectives. Well, we're talking a lot about cross-chain things. So maybe it's a good time to roll into the announcement or whatever. So, and by the way, I don't even know what this account is, DeFi. Dexifier dropped the news. Is just in, the Maya protocol just secured 110,000 funding to integrate Zcash, a huge undertaking to change DeFi, blah blah blah. Now of course, with all the milestones that the grant thing happened, Y Wallet secured this, and as where was Jima pointing it out in the comments, he says, small correction, the grant isn't secured by Maya but by Hanh, or H-A-N-H, an independent contributor and dev at Y Wallet. he'll build Zcash integration into the Maya protocol. So it's not Zcash awarding it to Maya, but to a third party that will build this integration. And then they have the funny meme thing about Maya protocol being like, and there's some guy who's like eating, has juggling three plates of food, and Cardano is one of them. Then Zcash is next. And then the third one's Redacted, which Redacted is probably Arbitrum, but whatever. So I'm a little bit of an insider on this whole thing. So maybe I'll just let you give your opinion before it's tainted by my own.
So I have a few thoughts here. One, Maya protocol is awesome without question. We need more of these ThorChain friendly fork type things where you can go between coins in a decentralized fashion. So extremely supportive of that. I love that Maya is focusing on assets that aren't on ThorChain. So they have, I believe Atom and Kuji and a couple others, which you can't get. Dash, I think is another one that you couldn't get there. So I think that's just all around positive. I tend to be more skeptical of Zcash in general, because it's not a fully encrypted, fully private chain. And so, I have my own questions about that. I think it's good that they're integrating into Maya. I'm just extremely disappointed that Monero was not the next choice after that.
Yeah, it's one of those things that's very multifaceted on that, as far as like there's a lot that goes into these kinds of decisions and who decides and who funds things and things. I should point out that there's a kind of interesting perspective from Ywallet. So Ywallet's the one who's integrated to do this. So to start out with, Ycash is a fork of Zcash. It's a Zcash fork by, I forget, some developers. Kind of very reminiscent of Z Classic, if I were to say that. I don't know if anyone remembers Z Classic, but it was Zcash without the founder's reward, which is very controversial in some parts of the community thing, where 20% of the block reward went to a key group of insiders who helped to create the coin. And for those who don't necessarily know, there's a lot of stuff people don't know about Zcash, but after the first 4 years, the founder's reward was revisited and it got turned into what's called the Dev Fund, where for the next 4 years, and I think that's coming up to be revisited yet again very soon, 7% of the block reward would go towards the Electric Coin Company as the, I guess, elected core team to do core protocol. 13% would go to the Zcash Foundation, part of which is for grants, such as, for example, this grant. And so from my understanding, Ywallet is one of the more prominent Zcash and Ycash wallets, by the way. And during the sandblasting attack of the last year, basically, it ended not too long ago, right? But for the year-long or whatever sandblasting attack, which made it difficult for light clients to fully sync and use Zcash and shielded away very well, Ywallet was one of the ones that was working pretty well during the entire episode. And I believe they already did get a grant from Zcash to help implement some fixes to the solution to that problem. And so Ywallet is, again, it's not affiliated with Zcash at all, really. It's almost even a competitor. And they're quite the opportunists, but I'm not saying that as an insult. It just seems like they're just hanging around and ready to take on extra side work. And so I know that my own insider perspective on that is, like, I've been a huge fan of ThorChain. I started pushing hard for them to add Dash, and then later I started mentioning Zcash. ThorChain talked about, and Monero, of course, as well, they gave at least lip service, and at some point actually said they were integrating. Again, the social media said they were. At least Dash, but probably the other two as well. They sort of mentioned that. And to where there was a governance proposal that allocated funding to do this, to integrate into ThorChain on the Dash side, for sure. There was also a proposal to do that on the Zcash side as well. And the Dash community pivoted to get it to Maya as soon as Maya launched. And the Zcash community was kind of, whoever had the grant before was kind of unclear if they were going to then decide to pivot and start doing that. Instead, they got their grant rescinded because they did. And then now there's is the availability for Zcash to come in and sort of do that. And I definitely beat the drum on the Zcash side too. I just said, you guys should be on Maya, you know? And so that's that whole background. Before I talk about where Monero fits into this, I'll let you get some air here.
Yes, I mean, I'm kind of curious, with the integration with Zcash, is it going to be shielded or unshielded transactions?
I'm unsure right now. I think to a certain extent there might be, it might be a lot easier to do it. It's obviously easier to do it unshielded. It might be unshielded. I can't remember. I'd have to look into the, dig into the actual thread.
Because I do recall,
I think it's shielded, right? Because in this, really? In this thread here, I see a milestone description, a shielded sender in case of rejection, custom memo, receiving. Maybe it is a transparent integration, but it's not an exchange address, as I mentioned on the previous podcast with Binance. It's definitely not one of those. But anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, because I was kind of going down the path of, you know, some conversations again on social media around ThorChain and Monero. Folks have pointed out that, you know, maybe ThorChain and ThorSwap aren't as decentralized as we would all like to think they are, and that introducing something that a nation state wouldn't like would put them under scrutiny and put the business at risk. I don't know if that's just, you know, folks doing what they do on Twitter, or if there was actually some thinking, you know, from the ThorChain perspective on that's why they didn't want to go down Monero. Because I heard that Monero had actually done some work to help support that kind of integration. And then I was just kind of wondering, like, oh, does that still apply with shielded transactions and Zcash on Maya?
So a lot of this is, I'm sure, internal discussions into teams that I'm not a part of. So I can't know for sure. But what I do know is I believe the initial decision not to integrate what could be considered privacy coins is more of a decision not to integrate lower market cap coins, where it seems like the ThorChain team decided to prioritize other integrations. Like when Dogecoin was on fire, they added Dogecoin. And I don't know if it paid off for them in terms of trading volume. But then Luna was another one that ended up being a mistake for reasons we're very well aware of today. But just like those big hitters is what they're moving towards. Solana, I believe. And just like some of the bigger hitters is kind of what they were looking for. And so they pushed the other ones to the side. But there were two events that I remember happen. One was before the Luna thing, the ThorChain lending protocol was going to be released, and it was going to use an algorithmic stablecoin very similar to the UST of Luna. And when the Luna thing happened, the community got spooked, and the developers did not get spooked, but the community did, or at least I should say Chad did not get spooked. And it ended up happening later, and the algorithmic stablecoin does still exist in ThorChain, but purely as an internal accounting mechanism where it's minted and then burned. And it's just a thing to keep track of, like, the USD value of the loan when you do these kind of, which it's kind of more longing or shorting an asset, right, than a loan, but it is what it is, right? They call it what they do. So that kind of happened. When the Tornado Cash thing happened, when Alexei Pirtsev got arrested, that spooked people as well on the privacy assets. There was a giant discussion on it. I did have Chad on my podcast to talk about it. He was always one of the braver ones, saying, like, nah, I don't care. Like, this is what it's for. It's, you know, for censorship resistance. They ended up having some internal conversations and votes, and I believe that the votes came on the signaling or whatever came on the side of, yes, let's integrate privacy assets if it comes to that. And it, as usual, like, there's an easy way for, like, the terrified voices to sound like they're the voice of the community, even though they were a voice of a part of the community, but not most of it. Mostly ThorChain does not have a problem integrating this. And I do know the Maya protocol has very much no problem with it because they are a non-team. I know Alux has shown his face, even though he hasn't doxed his whatever else, but they're outside of the US and they don't have any bank accounts or anything. I know this because I've done some work with the Maya protocol, and they have to work through, I guess, KYC partners in order to get anything done because they don't have the means to sign agreements or anything because they don't exist. They're just cypherpunk, right? And so that's pretty cool. So As far as the Monero integration, I know it's all Monero's had so many integration problems over the years because of its unique setup and its always on privacy kind of thing. I can't remember the exact thing that was a holdup with Thorchain. I do think there were some threshold signature libraries or something along those lines which were outdated and not secure on the Monero side that just made them say, well, look, we're not going to integrate until this is fixed. So I know there were some, I think the fellow who's heading up the Sorydex development is a Thorchain developer who just decided to do this as a side project and is committed to solving these kinds of issues. So on the technical side, the Monero is much trickier to implement because of this. And also the funding side of, like, if you have a nonprofit foundation, which a big chunk of the block reward can grant like 110 grand to integrate, it's a lot easier to get stuff done than it is to be like harassing people on Twitter, add our coin or you're centralized or whatever. And so that's kind of how I think it shook out. But if we have Sarai at some point and we have DEX aggregation, if any of these liquidity pools become big enough, I think that Thorchain might also have it. Just like Thorchain, Chainflip, Maya, and Sarai will all have Bitcoin and Ethereum for sure. And a few of them will also have Solana as well. Like, not just on one of those. And all the smaller ones will be just on one of these exchanges. Yeah. So I think that would probably, I think if Sarai is making a ton of money on Monero, if it's enough money on Monero, then the other ones will be scrambling to get it too.
So I guess for the Monero communities watching, use Sarai when it comes out a lot.
Yeah. And familiarize yourself with the other ones that are there in the meantime, right?
Yeah.
And or if you don't want to wait for Sarai to be out, maybe you can, you know, saber rattle at the Maya people and be like, no, like, but you got to like help them with the work because they have a small dev team. There's only so much they can do, you know. But it's like, get things done is basically the thing. And Monero is obviously harder to integrate because of its setup. And I think if they migrate the technology to a more like full membership proof kind of zero knowledge approach, things might get simpler. I don't know if it'll be easier, but things might get simpler from a technological perspective. And so, you know, fingers crossed
heard,
on that.
Have you heard any dates on Seraphis?
No, I can't quite. I have not done a deep dive. It's kind of like a CBDC in that everyone knows what a CBDC is conceptually. Everyone knows it's coming and it's bad. Whereas, you know, everyone knows Seraphis is coming and it's good. But the actual details of what that entails, like, is it going to be on a specific blockchain? How is it going to do seem to be murkier. So I had heard that they were going to use some of the latest Zcash research or something like that. But then I heard, no, that's not true. They're going to go for more of a Firo Atlantis Spark based approach instead. I've heard rumors. So I will have to, if any Monero person who has access to the devs who are talking about this is watching this, please, I'd be more than happy to have you on the show and talk about it.
Yeah, I've heard the line that goes something like, as long as ring signatures are fine, we will keep them there until whoever is attacking them, you know, NSA or whoever, gets close enough that we're concerned, then we'll switch. So we want nation states to burn as much effort as possible on something that can be switched out trivially.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the switches would be trivial, but it is an interesting perspective, and it's always going to be an arms race. That's for sure. A good friend of mine, Naomi Brockwell, is an expert in the privacy area and goes to a lot of these conferences and has her mind a little bit. I mean, she doesn't sleep enough as it is because of how hard she works, but like, it's even worse when you start seeing just how much anti-privacy technology there is out there that we don't have a whistleblower like Snowden talking about. So it's always going to be an arms race. We always have to deploy the very best out there.
I've got a little story about Snowden from back when I was at Google.
Sure, let's go. And let's wrap up with that one. That would be a great way to cap off the show.
Oh, okay. Now I'm going to have to make it more interesting than it actually is.
Well, that's fine. So,
you know, back when Snowden revealed what he revealed, one of the things that at least Google at the time wasn't aware of was that the government was actually tapping into their data channels that was, I guess, always assumed to be secure. And so that was sent in the clear. Now, it's one of these where, yeah, there was a project to go and encrypt that and to make that more secure, but it didn't have any priority. There was almost a collective gasp across the entire company of like, holy shit. And, you know, very soon afterwards, they'd patched that particular flaw. But it does make me think, what other security assumptions have they made of things that are supposed to be secure and very difficult to attack that someone with infinitely more resources has actually compromised already, and they're just deprioritizing that security because they don't know that it's been compromised. So, yeah, I think Google has, at the time, they had very good intentions on protecting our data. I don't know, you know, what they're like today. I no longer work there, but I was impressed with the reaction from Google, at least.
Yeah, there's a lot more that you don't know about going on. And one thing I think has been sort of received a little bit of a muted response, which should have been a much larger response, is was it Moonstone Research's comment and research on the was it the CCS or was CSS, whatever the acronym is, the hack that happened to the Monero community, where there was a hack and a lot of community funds were lost, and some, you know, former members of the former core team, I guess members of Monero, were able to trace the transaction on the blockchain a few stops because of some unique circumstances, which is not like an absolute tracing, but it is an actual, like, it's not like an external data. It's a blockchain level tracing of Monero transactions to a certain extent. And
I mean, let's be fair, right? They don't have the view key for those particular transactions.
Yes. And this is where we start to get into like way past my technical expertise level, but I'd encourage anyone to look at the Moonstone Research like report on exactly what they're able to find. But I guess the point is, that's like, this is like where we're starting to see what we know already, and who knows what we don't know. And the only way, that's why I encourage everyone to be very careful with what they use, how they use it, and also understand that they're trying to move the space forward in a freer, better, more private way, rather than pretend to be Mr. Invincible today, which, you know, it's most people cannot get away with paying no taxes, right? Usually you're going to have to do some of that, but we're trying to move the whole, we're trying to have a human race wide move away from tyranny, not just be like, I press a button and I'm fully sovereign. It's like,
yeah, quite, always tell
quite
people
that easy.
Like don't do crime. And also here's some tools to improve your privacy.
Yes. That would be a great t-shirt. Maybe don't do crime, here's some tools to improve your privacy, Monero. Just although they don't seem to like the don't do crime part. It's like, you know, dark nets, but whatever. I'm telling people don't do crime unless you're willing to deal with the repercussions. That's just what I'm saying. All right, that's a great way to wrap up the podcast before we get swatted here. Let's see, are there blue lights outside? I'm just kidding. I also checked the time. It's shill o'clock. Oof, shill o'clock already. Where do you want to direct people? What are you going to shill? What do you want to tell the audience to go after?
Oh, awesome. So if you'd like to follow me, I'm on YouTube at Just Crypto, or Twitter, Technology Poet is me. Mm-hmm. Talk a lot about crypto, not just on one chain, on many, many chains. So if that's your jam, we'd love to connect with you as well. We have awesome folks, like Joel was just on our show about an hour ago. So we do bring a lot of folks from the privacy and the Bitcoin community on as well.
Yes. So follow at Technology Poet. That's the good way of finding stuff. Definitely you pinned at the very top the show that I was just on. That's a good show. But I did listen to your Kujira breakdown as well, and that was a good show as well. So that's cool. There's a lot of good stuff there. All right, everyone. Thanks for watching. Like, comment, share, subscribe, all the good stuff. Follow Vanessa, follow her channel, and we'll see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Cheers.